and welcome to the Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwitt, diabetic, type 1.
Riding Mark's coattails, my name is Dobie Maxwell, diabetic, type 2.
Welcome once again, and we'll talk about this and that pertaining to diabetes, we hope.
We are your semi-regular gateway into the dreaded disease that we're all trying to cure.
Now, this week, it's going to be good. Well, because some are good, some
it
are
bad. It
hasn't
been the last few, so let's buck a trend.
You know how it goes. This week we'll be talking about glucagon tips, the best diets. Because, you know, everybody does their resolution, what, New Year's, right?
Well, there are several New Year's. There's the Chinese New Year. There's the Jewish New Year.
Oh, Lordy. Yes.
I don't know when that is. It's the, I believe, the Cosmic New Year somewhere, too. Seriously.
So the point of it is you don't want to be like everybody else and have your resolution January 1st, because you're burned out by, what, the 3rd? This way, well, I, for one, start the resolutions mid-May, June. Uh-huh. And then some people say, I'm still on my resolution, though, and they'll look at you like, So we have all these different diabetic diets out there. There's lists of the best ones, the worst ones. We'll be talking to our special guest again, Donna Swanson from United Hospital System. She'll be on her way pretty soon. So Thanks for Donna. And then we'll be talking about glucagon kits. Might not mean much to you unless you are familiar with hypoglycemia. They are together. So we'll be talking about that. And let's start off first on the website. I'm going to say now it's up. Okay, right.
Okay,
it's up. TheDiabeticShow.com. Fingers are crossed. But there's just so much to it. It is chock full.
Chock full of diabetes information, and the all complaints go to Mark, M-A-R-K, at thediabeticshow.com, or fan letters to Donna at thediabeticshow.com. That'll all work. Money payments to Troy.
Troy
is our
Troy
producer,
and
my name is not anywhere on this whole entire project.
Yeah, no, until, like we've talked about this, the lawsuits.
Until the government check cashes.
That is true. So we'll jump off into the news. And this is this last time we were done, we talked about, they didn't call it a cure. They called it a fix for diabetes with Johnson & Johnson and Viacite. This one, you ready, Dope?
Of course
we're sitting down. Anyway, University of Colorado research team. It's is out of Science, the journal Science. Familiar, Dome?
My subscription ran out, but I'm very familiar with it, yes.
Major discovery for type 1 diabetes. The scientists have pinpointed one of the possible causes of the disease. Now, I realize it's a sentence. Hear me out on it. Okay, and this is according to Thomas DeLong. He's a research assistant professor at University of Colorado School of Medicine. As we all know, thanks to our guests like Donna, T cells are part of the immune system. Their job is to kill the foreign cells in the body to fight off disease. The body's a type 1 diabetic. T cells are known to kill the healthy insulin-producing cells, beta cells, another word for them. Without the cells, you become diabetic of one form or another. That's the problem. That's what causes diabetes. And we've talked with – actually, Donna, let's bring Donna in early, Troy. Donna, again, welcome to the show, United Hospital System.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me again.
And what do you do there exactly?
I am a certified diabetic educator and coordinator of our diabetes self-management education program.
Okay.
That's a big gig.
A lot of clients.
Unfortunately,
a lot of clients. We were just talking earlier today, we'll be up to 29 million plus diabetics, about 1 or 2 million type 1 diabetics.
Yes.
And we haven't even talked about pre-diabetes on the show. Another 300 billion that might be. It just seems like it's a number of people don't even want to look at or find out.
It's very high. The last projections that I saw that were released from the CDC, I believe, were they were projecting 84 million that were pre-diabetic and did not know it yet. But those estimates actually, the most recent estimates think that those numbers are improving, actually.
Improving?
Yes,
okay.
Improving.
Flattening a maybe a little?
Yeah, that they may not hit those projections of 84.
Okay. So let's get back to the story here. This is according to, told you again, Thomas DeLong about the T cells. What his team, he always wanted to know, and his team, why the immune cells attack those healthy beneficial cells. He's thinking there must be something inside of those cells that triggers the attack. And literally, after 10 years of unfunded work, basically, at the school, painstakingly stripping down the insulin-producing cells, and they were tracking reactions to T cells. And apparently they've hit on an answer, at least an answer enough for the ADA to give them a nice 5-year grant. So here's basically what it is. They get to these T cells. They keep stripping them down. What's making them different than what's making those T cells do what they're doing? They found a protein modification. That's really what they're calling it right now. They found a new type of protein modification, a hybrid, if you will, made up of half insulin and half something else. See, that's probably where the next 5 years is going to go. But that half something else apparently activates the T cell, causing it to attack. So now we've talked about this last show. We talked about the Johnson & Johnson trials.
Yes.
And you were kind of wondering at first anyway, well, okay, you release that new stem cell in the bloodstream and it turns into an insulin-producing cell. And then, well, here comes a T cell gang along and doing a drive-by kill on the cell. So, I mean, yeah. Is it, if you get this far back in the disease, if you can literally get to that point where that cell, even just before it's released, and then you see what the T cells are, mm-hmm. Does it make sense to you?
Yes.
I'm asking you to pontificate on something you just heard, so feel free to just take, you know.
Well, you know, I think the key to any cure with type 1 is going to be how do you get beta cell function without the T cell destroying it. And I think all research around type 1, we've seen a lot of it over the last 10 years, and a lot of it is very promising, including that Johnson & Johnson funded research from ViaCyte, which you're referring to. And the way that research aims at stopping the T cell from destructing it is just by sheerly separating the cells. Through that.
Literally and separating it through this.
Yeah, so that the T cell cannot reach those new beta cells.
And in other words, so it's a package that we were talking about.
Yeah, it's an encapsulation. So that encapsulation is what should, in theory, and that's what are in the research trials right now, that's what should stop the destruction. So the cause in that, I mean, even with this one, that's why they say, well, you know, to say it's a cure, well, it's a fix for sure. If it works, and it looks as though it does. I mean, all the research is looking very exciting. So that being said,
We're sidetracking, Donna. There's hand signals flying back and forth. Yes, I tell you what, Donna, we'll take the break. We'll stop messing with you. Now
you
we will point at Troy McDonald, our producer, and we'll take the break here. On the backside, we'll finish up this conversation, and then let's get into the meat of it. We've got some diets to talk about. We've got, glucagon kits. Now, I know on the surface it sounds,
Wasn't that planted on Star Wars where they had the last movie, glucagon?
See? There was a reason. The Diabetic Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Diabetic Show. Mark Philwood, type 1.
Dobie Maxwell, type 2.
And Donna Swanson from United Hospital System. Again, welcome to the show, Donna. Oh,
thank you.
Okay, the diets. We're all on diets, every one of us. Diabetic, non-diabetic.
Seafood.
It's everything.
Seafood, you eat it.
Everybody, even people who don't need diets are on diets, it seems. So here we are. I actually did some research this week. Yeah, you know, see what it was like. And I looked up the best diets for diabetics. And I've been a diabetic since 87. Dobie, relatively recent.
2011.
Okay, and being a type 2. Your job, basically, is to eat right and get the exercise and basically be...
You know, it was easy at first, and I'm sure Donna can corroborate with this, because it's you think you're going to die. Oh, my gosh, I went in a store. I can't eat anything in there except lead paint chips and water. and you know, then the doctor even said, he goes, man, I didn't think you could do it. I got off the medicine in 30 days. And I said, well, thank you for the confidence, vote of confidence. He goes, no, most people don't. And then I'm not nearly close to what I was before. I would exercise every day, and it was just great to eat everything, you know, that I was supposed to eat. And then it just kind of, you get off the wagon again, because you get some success, and you assume that, well, I'm there.
Yep.
I don't have to work at it.
That's very, very common.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
And speaking as a diabetic type 1, it's almost impossible. Very hard for me to lose weight because I keep injecting this insulin, this hormone that keeps me fat. I mean, isn't that basically what insulin is, a fat hormone? Or it turns things in? Help me out.
It comes from pigs. What do you expect?
Well, not cows. Anymore.
All right. And it's human recombinant now. Yeah. Okay.
Well, one of the jobs of insulin is to store fat. So the key for type 1, I mean, we do treat type 1 and type 2 a little bit different in that respect, but the key with type 1 is trying to utilize the least amount of insulin and maintain normal normal blood sugar levels with the least amount of insulin, because you don't want to be storing fat. So the theory of I can eat whatever I want as long as I take the right dose of insulin is sort of counterproductive in a lot of cases.
And you find yourself chasing highs, chasing lows, because you're always behind.
Yes, exactly. So you're better off doing a more consistent carbohydrate diet based on what your body requires versus based on how we all, the typical American diet, eating without thinking about what we're putting in our body.
Amazingly loose on how we do that. Now, real quick question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to interrupt
you. No.
Is it important? I found that like the three hours increments, six times a day meals. That's how I started out.
Fantastic.
It,
yes.
It worked really, really well.
It's perfect.
And now I eat once a day like a rattlesnake. You know, I eat a goat.
And that's,
I just
that's one of the worst things you can do for your body.
But seriously, honestly, truly, for my lifestyle, and I'm not making excuses, but I'm an entertainer. I'm on the road a lot, and sometimes I have chances to eat, sometimes I don't, and I'm not making excuses. But my lifestyle, I think, is even more hectic than whatever normal is. But normal people have a hard time.
It is. Yeah, it can be challenging for anybody.
Yeah,
and it really requires, the trick is plan for success, and plan to be successful. Well, planning for success is a big part of it. So you want to make sure that you're not having to put yourself in situations where you're eating on the go, because when we find ourselves eating out of convenience, then we tend to fail more. So ideally, when we talk about what the best meal plan is for somebody, I hate the word diet, because diet implies that I have to be limited and I have to. Mm-hmm. I prefer to eat healthy. I want to eat healthy in healthy amounts, the way my body is meant to metabolize.
Whole wheat ding dongs.
You're going to be the inventor of that, I can tell.
I'm working on it.
Dobie brings up a good point, because it seems the rules have been changing, at least for me being a diabetic 30 years now. It's been changing. And what you were saying, how many times a day, that's changed. I remember.
Oh, so when you started, when you were 87,
in 87, you know, of course.
How many times a day did you eat?
Well, Lord, how do I remember? Corey Hart was in the top 40, okay? I mean, you know, I wore my sunglasses at night. It was a whole different world. Cyndi Lauper, need I say more? It was a whole other world, and you're probably too young. But yeah. Well, actually, no, Dobie, you're not that young.
I was old when I was young.
That's true. But it seems the rules change. Why?
Because we've learned more about the disease, is what I would presume. The getting back to the six small meals a day, remember when I was first, when I was pregnant with my first child, my OBGYN said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to eat six small meals a day. He didn't say any amount, and I didn't have gestational diabetes. He just said for general good nutrition, and I had a fantastic OB doc, and he gave me that advice 16 years ago. And I remember thinking, wow, when I started teaching diabetic education and started teaching to gestational diabetic patients, we put them on that same meal plan, six small meals a day.
Six Big Macs.
Yeah, right. But it's amazing. We started doing, at the clinic that I work in, we started having people write down what they ate yesterday. So they had to only remember one day back. Most people can remember what they had the day before. Not all. But after
you jog. Do they everything, though?
Most people, ironically, because we don't judge. We know most people, you know, most people mindlessly eat.
Sure.
Everybody's aware of that fact. It's just, and we are there to help, so we're not there to judge at all. And really what we found is that people, it's really a self-reflection tool. It's not really for us. It's so that people can identify, okay, this is what your body needs. This is what I'm actually consuming. And what we found is that most people, regardless of the type of diabetes that they have, eat three meals a day, if that. A lot of times, like you described, one, you know, life gets in the way. They get busy. They are eating on the go, eating in the car, that sort of thing. They eat if they're lucky, three meals a day, usually two and a snack here or there, and they're eating 3 to 4 times as many calories and carbohydrates as they should be, as what their body requires.
Especially what they're eating and where they're eating.
Yeah, because of the types of foods. So it doesn't take a huge quantity of food to exceed it. It takes just not lack of planning, really, is what it boils down to.
You bring up a good point. Every once in a while, I will treat myself to the McDonald's because what is life without? Mm-hmm. And what always kills me is at least I'm getting out of my car and waddling to that counter to place the order, as opposed to the people in the drive-thru where you see it's got a half hour. I'll just sit there.
Well, I can attest you're not waddling. Okay, you walk normal.
Thank you. It's, you know, Spanx helps. So I guess the point is, though, the first time would have been Atkins for me. And see, you get the, Donna gives you that look again. You miss it with the podcast, the radio. I saw that look during my practice marriage in the 80s. So I'm sure that's not a good look. Now, Atkins did work for me to the extent where I literally cut out every carb in the world. And inside of 30 days, I probably lost about 15 pounds. And people want to see the results.
Yes.
And if you want to see the fast, obviously mostly unhealthy way to do it, it seems that way, the Atkins is the way. And the way I put it that in that form is many, I don't know, people remember Atkins, very thin, very slight man who just lived the diet. He was just the guru of his world, so to speak, even his wife, I think. And he died by slipping and falling and hitting his head. And then he passed. They never released the autopsy. And I thought, if you're really, and talk about a test tube. I mean, he lived it. He lived it. I would want to see what his arteries looked like. I'd want to hear about it. So go ahead. Let me have it.
Probably like a cheese stick. I'm thinking like a mozzarella stick when you break it in half. That's probably what his aorta looked like.
I would hate to see the inside. Well, the Atkins, a lot of people saw a lot of weight loss with that, but it's not – I mean, when that diet came out, I am sure all good physicians around the world were up in arms, and I remember a lot of them were. I don't remember exactly how many in all the comments, but I know it was not widely received by physicians well.
But a pound of bacon with 7 eggs.
Oh, it just sounds like heaven. It sounds like everybody should be able to do it and lose weight. Oh, my gosh, it just sounds
rib
heavenly.
On top of it.
But the reality is, anything and it's also saturated fat. And I remember at the time, this is way too good to be true. You can't eat that much fat, that much animal fat, and have it be healthy for you. Mm. And people did lose weight, but the reason that they lost weight is because they cut out all carbs and they put their body into fat metabolism. They were burning all fat metabolism, and the downfall is that the byproduct of that is ketones. And ketones put your body into an acidic state, and that can be harmful to veins and vessels and organs, and that's why doctors were like, no, this is not good for anybody. Now, when you get into the later weeks of Atkins where it's low carb, way less harmful, because you're still getting carbohydrates, and that's what your cells need for fuel. So the question really when it comes to diabetes, Atkins is very dangerous for anybody with diabetes because they're already at risk for cardiovascular disease.
Like 15, 20, it's a number. It's an exponential number over 9 diabetics.
I'm on the Chet Atkins diet.
Chet.
Yes.
Good tunes.
Chewing tobacco and grits.
I tell you what.
We got to take a break. Hold that thought.
We better take the break.
You're cheating
come
hard.
Back. Our thanks again to Troy McDonald, our producer, who has to deal with this. This is The Diabetic Show. Welcome to yet another chunk of The Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwett.
You're type 1.
Oh, I am type 1.
Soon to be ex-type 2.
He's working on it. He is.
Very optimistic.
Yes. The Chet Atkins diet especially. Mm-hmm. Grits and what?
Chewing tobacco. Mm. We keep all the carbohydrates. It filters them out really well.
Donna Swanson still here? Donna here?
I'm surprised her car is running.
Yeah.
But she is still here for the next few minutes.
Donna Swanson, our guest from United Hospital Systems. Again, thank you for dealing with it, Donna. Okay, at the break, we're talking about Atkins. Put in your final 4 cents in Atkins. Obviously, it's no good.
Well, I think once you get past that first week, it's really not bad. It's just that, you know, We advocate more in line with the American Diabetes Association, and that is doing a heart healthy diet, more well rounded, more whole foods,
lots of legumes and complex dark greens.
Whole foods, the way our bodies.
Honestly, truly, Don, I know I'm a smart aleck in my life, but it's hard to eat that way. I mean, this. I'm going to bring up the name Seattle Sutton. I heard those. I heard good things
about
her.
Seattle Sutton. We hear a lot of good things about Seattle Sutton's food. And also, we do have an opening for product sponsorship on the show.
I'm not saying it for that reason. But that's just an example of someone that I've heard good things about. Do you know? I mean, people, that's pre-prepared food. I don't know how much that costs. Is it affordable to the average person?
Who's average, first? And secondly, I think anytime you're getting the same size or you're getting the same size meal, it's like what you're talking about, Don. It's consistency.
Yes. Consistency, portion control, carbohydrate control. There's a few tools that everybody with diabetes should have. The first one I would say is a Calorie King book. So first start identifying which foods are carbohydrate, which foods are protein, which foods are starchy vegetables, our carbohydrates are starchy vegetables and grains. So anything that starts out as a grain, whatever it turns into. So we have healthy, unhealthy carbs, all of that. So like when we talk about carbohydrates, we're talking pretty much that food group, healthy starches and grains.
So Oreos, not healthy.
Yeah, that's sort of a high refined carb concentrated sweet.
A lot of people don't know the white part, very healthy.
It's tofu, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the sandwich cookies.
I have not heard that.
I saw it on
the
internet.
That's the rumor.
I'm sure.
That's the rumor I'm starting.
But in general, so getting back to the tools that people need with diabetes, one is a good tool to identify which foods are which. What is carbohydrate? What is protein? What are healthy vegetables? That sort of thing.
Sure.
And then getting good balance. And your dairy, because some dairy is counted as carbohydrates, or milk and yogurt.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yep.
Unhealthy vegetables, are there any? You said healthy vegetables. It seems almost like they all are, aren't they? Or are they not?
I would say all vegetables pretty much have some nutritional value. Some have more than others. Mm-hmm. But really the question is, when they're starchy vegetables, they have a higher concentration of carbohydrate in it. So potato, okay. Corn. Okay. Peas, those are starchy vegetables. So those you want to just count. And so then the question is, how much carbohydrate do I need to consume daily? So the first thing I would say recommend.
Use numbers like she said, sure.
The first thing I would recommend everybody do is look at what the American Diabetes Association on their website, they have a plate model, and see what our plates should look like. That's the way grandma and grandpa used to cook, whole foods, all of that. So you have the meat being the size of a deck of cards, and it's the leanest meat possible.
Top of the pyramid.
Yep.
Where's the T-bone?
And then then what should my portion of carbohydrate be, or healthy starches? And then you got your veggies, or about half of your plate. And these plates are not like your standard dinner size. We're talking like a salad size plate.
No, it should be like the steering wheel from 1974 right. Cadillac Eldorado.
So then, you know, and making sure that we get some dairy, and so that, you know, you've got a well-rounded meal in front of you. So portion control is a big part of it, and making sure that we're getting a healthy balance. So starting with that, then get a Calorie King book. I would recommend everybody, if you're eating carbohydrates, when you have diabetes, it's important to know how much is too much. The average woman should have anywhere from 2 to 3 carb choices. And if anybody doesn't know what a carb choice is, it's one diabetic carb choice or exchange is 15 grams if you're reading a label, because carbs in the free world are measured in grams.
And that's another diet that the Simmons used a diet similarly like that, where things were assigned numbers, and you had only so many numbers per
day. Yeah, and Weight Watchers has it too.
They all, to a point, have the same structure.
Basically, they're all just focusing on portion control. How much is too much? So basically, when you have diabetes, you need to know how much. So there's a couple ways you can get that information. If you get a Calorie King book, they have a nice little section in the front that says how much the average person should have, male, woman. Like I said, the woman is 2 to 3 carb choices at breakfast and lunch, and then dinner is usually 3 to 4. So in grams, that would be 30 to 45 grams at breakfast and lunch, and then 45 to 60 at dinner.
But some of the granola bars have close to that alone, don't they?
Some, yeah. And that's when people really, so back to what we were talking about earlier, when we had people filling out what they ate yesterday, they had no clue that they were over-consuming these carbohydrates when we actually counted them up.
And it's not just you.
It doesn't take much.
It's if you go out, it's the menu.
Yes,
There are places that you go, I'm getting a salad. And if they remember, I can't remember where it was, big salad with fried chicken in it. And I'm thinking, you know.
But
tastes great, though. But you know what helps when you put on the no-calorie ranch? Because it just completely offsets the chicken. Oh, we're running out of time. Look, we have to have you back.
Can I plug one more thing
Please do.
Thank you. So a great Netflix documentary. We've been advocating this for a long time. One of our cardiologists over at United, Dr. Fullen, is a big advocate of plant-based eating. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go plant-based, but after watching that documentary on Netflix, it's called Fork Over Knife.
I knew it.
You really get a better understanding. And most people that walk away after watching that naturally want to eat a little bit healthier. And like I say, you don't have to go entirely plant-based, but after seeing that, it's going to make you want to be eating
better.
Every
gram of protein you leave off and it's substituted by something healthy, it makes a difference. And
it does.
It's a war of attrition.
Yeah.
I mean, as a diabetic, I'm going to try to keep as healthy as I can until something else kills me. Okay. The website, thediabeticshow.com. The email, mark@thediabeticshow.com.
Dobie@thediabeticshow.com. Say hello. Ask questions. Donna will be back again. Thanks for being here, as always.
Thank you.
United Hospital System. Donna Swanson, thanks again. Executive producer, congratulations, you just got a promotion. That would be Troy McDonald. He's way over there. Thanks again for helping us, so Troy. We'll talk to you next time, and thanks for listening to The Diabetic Show.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, back outdoors for the warm weather season, this week featuring the Cheese People, offering soft and firm cheeses along with freshly made cheese curds. Kenosha Harbor Market on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Douay is open Saturdays from 9 to 2.
Support for WGTD comes from Andreas, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, that's what keeps you coming back. Visit AndreasGifts.com for more information.
'24/7 Jazz on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-3030.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. They believe that every detail counts and every memory matters. Piasecki Althaus is located in Kenosha on 39th Avenue, serving the community since 1931.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello. My name is Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters from WGTD Public Radio. Today's panel features four area teachers who are also military veterans. One of them is a former student of mine from Carthage College, and I've heard from both my students who've worked in his classroom and his colleagues about how structured and disciplined his classroom is, and it made me wonder how much of his teaching is influenced by military training and experience. So I put together this panel of four guests. The first is Greg Anderle, who is a former Army Field Artillery Officer, commissioned in 1984.